Epilogue. In spring 2021, I watched a Vice documentary on YouTube about Mexican families living near the U.S. border, whose children had been abducted or killed by the drug cartel. At a press conference, a group of them held up large photos of their children, something that is common in protests in Latin America. It made me wonder, would mothers of the San Francisco Bay Area do something similar to protest the drug dealers preying on their addicted children in the Tenderloin? I decided to ask two of the mothers I had interviewed, whose sons are addicted to fentanyl and homeless in the Bay Area. I would definitely consider doing that, said Kelly Stamphill, who said she had just seen her son Morgan a few days earlier. I walked through those 11 drug dealers and a guy stopped me and said, "You are dressed too well to be in the Tenderloin." I showed him a picture of my son and he knows him. They kept trying to sell me drugs. It took every bit of coolness and calmness to not become a crazy person and scream, "Don't sell drugs to my son." But they also had machetes and I knew that wouldn't end well. And so, after thinking more about it, Kelly understandably decided against it. "He's living in a tent city, a safe sleeping site," he said. "Mom, get out of the TL." He was really worried about my safety, but also was embarrassed that I'm showing these drug dealers a picture of him because he's there all the time. I don't want to put his life in jeopardy. A month ago, before I knew where he was, I wanted to start doing harm to the dealers and bringing them down in justice. But now that I know where he's at, I'm scared for him. I also spoke with Jackie Berlin, whose son Corey compared San Francisco to Pleasure Island in Pinocchio. I asked her how he was doing. "My anxiety level is very high right now," she said. "The last time I heard from him was mid-January. He usually contacts me once a month. He knows that I get anxious. I haven't heard if he's alive. I don't even know how I would find out if he's a victim of a crime on the streets. I can't find him in the hospital because he'd be under an alias. He's literally out there alone." I asked, "Have you ever attended a protest?" "No," she said, and then started to laugh, which made me laugh. "Why are you laughing?" I asked. "I work in law enforcement," said Jackie. "I'm a legal process clerk for the Alameda County Sheriff's Office across the bay from San Francisco. Recent protests have affected my life. I work at the courthouse in Oakland, which was a target of graffiti, breaking windows, and trying to set fires. They boarded up the windows, and I didn't have sunshine. They didn't know when they would go crazy. So when I think of protest, I think of it in terms of violence. I don't believe in destroying property." Then, before I had mentioned any specifics, Jackie said, "I would be willing to hold up a huge picture of my son and walk around with it." "What makes you say that?" I asked. "I saw the tweet by T. Tom Wolf today," said Jackie. "He said he counted 11 dealers in a picture he posted. I thought, would I have the guts to stand across from them with a picture of my son on a sign and tell them not to sell to my son? I know they're very powerful, they have gangs. And I would put myself at risk. But I would, absolutely." "I was literally about to ask you if you would do that," I said. "I thought it was bold that Tom posted a picture of them," Jackie said. "I was imagining if they saw him taking a picture of them. He's putting himself at risk. Being in law enforcement, I know what a risk it is to stand up against them. But why is it okay for 11 dealers to sell drugs to our children? Every single time they sell something, it's an opportunity for our children to die." As I listened to her, I reminded myself that protesting fentanyl dealers connected to international drug mafias might not be the safest thing in the world. As Kelly said, they also had machetes. On the other hand, if we are too intimidated to peacefully protest foreign drug dealers poisoning our children and fellow human beings in downtown San Francisco, degrading the fabric of civic life, then we are, in some way, participating in civilization's end. I found myself thinking about the progressive and Christian concepts of witness. In the Bible, a witness is not only someone who sees something important, she is also somebody who takes responsibility by sharing what she sees. In the 1980s, a progressive activist research group called Witness for Peace documented human rights violations in Central America. It was that role, as witness, not the role of rescuer, I realized at that moment, which was the right role for me. And so I told Jackie that I would stand with her as her witness, even if it ended up just being the two of us, and promised to investigate how to do it in a safe way for everyone, including by speaking with the San Francisco Police Department beforehand. I told her we could take inspiration from the Mothers of the Plaza de Mayo in Buenos Aires in the late 1970s. Their quiet courage galvanized protests that ultimately resulted in the downfall of the government and the advent of a new political era. Before ending our call, we both agreed to look for allies. I reached out to Adam Mesnick, the deli board restaurateur who discovered that fentanyl addicts describe coming to San Francisco to die from overdose. I told him about our idea. "I'd love to help," he said, without hesitation. "How do people not hear when a parent writes on Twitter, 'My daughter or my son is on the streets of the Tenderloin, people are running around like it's a party, and my kid is going to die?" said Mesnick, alluding to San Francisco's 713 drug overdose deaths in 2020. "I have no idea how many people died in San Francisco from COVID-19 last year, but I know it wasn't 700. It was 252. What would a movement to save our cities and states look like? We might start with the people most impacted, the residents of the neighborhoods invaded by violent anarchists, the restaurant and store owners, the residents of the Tenderloin, Skid Row, and the Blade, and other neighborhoods degraded by open-air drug dealing, people who like parks, parents and families of homicide, overdose, poisoning, and addiction victims, all who believe cities are sacred and that sidewalks should be safe, clean, and clear for everyone, including children, the elderly, and the disabled. It made sense to me that some of the leaders of such a movement might be mothers, and that their power would emerge from overcoming their shame. Harvey Milk understood this power better than anyone else. He knew that social values and norms weren't fixed. They change. We change them. It wasn't shameful to not pick up one's dog's poop before Milk made it shameful. It was shameful to be gay before he made it unshameful. It was shameful to inject hard drugs on sidewalks, and should be so again. Kelly emphasized that she supported the idea even if she couldn't join us on the streets. "It would draw attention," she said. "Maybe people will say, these people like Corey and Morgan have parents and friends." The mothers who fight for their children should not be ashamed. Kelly and Jackie have nothing to be ashamed of. They have been fighting for their sons' lives for over a decade against a system that refuses to help them, ostensibly out of fairness and compassion to their sons. "I used to hide my story out of shame," said Jackie. "But I realized a few years ago that that didn't help my son or myself. I have been speaking up ever since." The people who most need to feel shame are those who failed to take responsibility for the situation and allowed it to worsen for decades. All of us.